This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program for the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. Want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Walter Koenig, Chekhov from Star Trek, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Risk is our business.
It's like nothing we've dealt with before.
By golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day.
I can't change the laws of physics.
Now in standard orbit, sir.
Welcome, everyone, to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's original series podcast. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and with me today is...
Meow.
Really? Well, I thought we were going to do the podcast today.
Meow.
All right, if you insist. All right. That could be two episodes, then, we're talking about. Either Assignment Earth or Cat's Paw. We'll let you decide.
No, we'll do Cat's Paw. Hi, it's Brandon.
Hey, Brandon. Halloween, right? It's today. Happy Halloween, guys. All Hallows Eve, as they said in ye old world. We thought it'd be fun to do a commentary on Cat's Paw, one of the much maligned episodes of the original series. Brandon and I did a commentary on And the Children Shall Lead not too long ago, and that was a lot of fun to do. And, there's just, love it or hate it, it's there's a lot to talk about in these really absurd episodes. So I think it's going to be fun back and forth here, Brandon.
I agree with you. I mean, people always want to talk about the good episodes, and I think it's much more fun to talk about the ones that fall below the bar, let's just say.
It's Halloween, guys, so we're just doing a special supplemental episode here for you, a little treat for your trick-or-treat bag, and we're going to be talking about Cat's Paw. I must say, I did rewatch this episode recently in preparation for this conversation. I will say, it's not as bad as I remembered it, so kudos to you, Robert Block.
Author of Psycho.
I know, right?
And if you want some more goodness for Cat's Paw, tune into Melodic Treks episode 60 that came out last year, where Adam Drozen joined me and we discussed the music for Cat's Paw, and it was a fun conversation. So that's Melodic Treks episode number 60.
Sounds good, man. Well, everybody cue up your VCRs, your Laserdisc players, your reel-to-reels, your Blu-rays, or your streaming services, be it Hulu, Netflix, or CBS All Access. We'll count you down 3, 2, 1, and play. And when we say play, you hit play, and we'll watch the episode along together. You ready, Brandon?
Are you watching this on your Laserdiscs?
I would, but we're watching it live stream together on Zoom.
Oh, okay. So on your Laserdiscs, are they one episode aside or what?
Yes, they're one episode aside, so I don't have to turn them over the episode's over. So yes, that is my preferred method of watching the original series. I have the complete series on Laserdisc, and I watch it on my standard definition 4x3 television, and it just like when I was a kid, so I love it. All right. 3, 2, 1, play.
Here we go, season 2. This is the first episode produced for season 2, right? But it wasn't the first one aired, so...
They held it back for Halloween.
They did, and it's a good thing that they did. Now, I'll point out a couple things as we go through this, but I watched this with Aubrey, just over a year ago, I'd say. And, as a young kid, there was a couple of times when she was, freaked out watching this episode. Yeah. So I'll point out, there was one or two of them, the cat freaked her out for sure, and the witches, when the witches' heads are, floating and stuff, she legit, ran and hid underneath our couch. It's pretty funny.
Well, what they're talking about here is they're talking about how Scott and Sulu and a character named Jackson beam down to this planet together, and I think that's how landing parties should be, Like, no big three in this landing party. No first officer, no chief medical officer, no captain. But this is probably the only time that happens on TOS. What do you say, Brandon?
Well, that's how they did it in... well, no, not necessarily, because Riker was always on it in Next Generation, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's the 60s, and it's your star of the show's the captain, so of course he's going to go down all the time and do all the action and all the fun and everything like that. Speaking of going down, look at that fall. That's like a person, too. That's not a dummy.
Falling like a champion. Jackson, the gold shirt, red shirt, huh?
Mm-hmm. Looks like John Leguizamo.
He does, doesn't he? That's a good that's a good lookalike.
Somebody tweeted the other day. Somebody tweeted, they're like, "What's your favorite scary movie with like no blood or gore for somebody?" And I tweeted, "The Pest with @John Leguizamo." It's scary that stuff got made. And John Leguizamo liked my tweet, and then he unliked my tweet.
He's like, "Oh, that looks bad on my part. Let me unlike that." Oh man, so that's a compelling hook for the opening of the episode. There's a curse on your ship, you know.
Yeah, it's not something you normally get. I mean, like, normally this is quite scientifically accurate, this show, with, like, space hands and space Lincolns, you know? So to get a space curse is... that's not good.
Completely out of the question. So the opening credits in Season 2, right, they added the singer. Like, oh, that's, you know...
sound just like her.
You're gonna say something. Well, do you prefer the Season 1 music with... out the singer, or the Season 2 music with the singer?
I prefer the Deep Space Nine theme song myself. That's my favorite.
All right, that's not what I asked. First of all, the Deep Space Nine theme, first of all, is the most boring theme in Star Trek. It's like an endurance test to sit through those opening credits the first three seasons. I'm so glad they updated them.
I know you disagree.
We've talked about this before.
I'm exiting tricks. This commentary. I'm not even finishing this stuff.
But I think it's more iconic of the two to have the singer in the opening credits. So I do. This is my preferred version, because I also prefer the yellow text over the blue, because that's iconic Star Trek. I don't mind the blue. It's like a good sign to tell, like, hey, what season you're in. But, you know, the singer and the yellow opening credits is my ideal opening credits of the original series. Plus, you got DeForest Kelly in there too, and he deserves a spot.
Zach S2. That's what we'll call you from now on.
So Catspaw, as we mentioned earlier, it's written by, we saw the opening credits there, written by Robert Block from Psycho, and he wrote three episodes of the original series.
Hey, I bet you I could name him.
Go ahead, Brandon.
Okay, so I know that he did this, and he did What Are Little Girls Made Of?
Mm-hmm.
And he did the Season 2 episode with Piglet the Ripper, which is, give me a second here.
Piglet the Ripper, so good.
Wolf in the Fold.
Yes, correct. Of the three, I think What Are Little Girls Made Of is by far the best of those three. And that's actually one of my favorite episodes.
I would agree.
Underrated episode, too. Nobody talks about it. We should do a commentary on that one sometime.
We should do a commentary on Wolf in the Fold.
Oh, no.
I love Wolf in the Fold.
You know, it can be seen as harmless fun, but I can also see why other people don't like it. Mm-hmm. And it has some really weird gender politics in it, with Scotty hating women. But we'll get to that when we get to that. We'll file that one away for our next commentary, Brandon. I wouldn't mind doing that one with you. So
We find ourselves on the planet from Galileo 7.
Yeah, they do kind of disguise it pretty well, though, I think. I think it's very atmospheric. I know what they're going for, and I feel like they are achieving what they're going for. It's like, it's very gray. You have the fog. The fog's machine. The fog machines are working on overdrive here.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen The Fog by John Carpenter?
I have seen the remake of The Fog starring Tom Welling.
Oh, you got to see the original. Jamie Lee Curtis, man. Who's this guy, DeSalle?
It's Assistant Chief Engineer DeSalle. Oh,
look
at
that hair.
Who was in three episodes himself? Can you name those three episodes that he was in?
He was in Catspaw. I know that.
You got that.
He was in... oh, man. I don't know if I know that. I know there's a Season 1 episode. Am I right on that?
There are two Season 1 episodes.
Two Season 1 episodes. So I think he was in... I'm going to plead ignorance. I don't know. What are they?
He was in Squire of Gothos.
Okay.
And This Side of Paradise.
Okay.
And it's nice to see recurring guest stars like him and like Lieutenant Riley and then Dr. Mbenga.
Mm-hmm.
But the only reason that he is in charge here is so Uhura wouldn't be in charge of the ship. Because Scotty and Sulu are on the planet, mm-hmm. and so are Spock, McCoy, and Kirk now. There's no one left to be in charge. And I'm sure there was some behind-the-scenes thing there that said, hey, we can't have Uhura in charge of the ship for multiple reasons in the 60s. So they just gave this guy a promotion to assistant chief engineer because he was a gold shirt before in his first two appearances. Mm-hmm. And now he's in a red shirt. I think he's a fine – I mean, this guy is like so like stereotypical 60s TV star, like square-jawed, you know, superhero-esque looking guy. And he's like, we're going to solve this problem, mister. You know, so, I mean, he's fine, and I would like to see him some more, but
– here. This here, man. This totally freaked my daughter out. These three head floating head witches.
Now, do you think they're supposed to look headless, or are we supposed to see their total necks?
Oh, no, they're supposed to just be heads. That's just lighting on the shirts. They're wearing black shirts, right? So they're supposed to be just floating heads.
Come on, Mike Okuda, you can step your game up on the TOS remastered on that. But, they did do some good stuff. We'll come up to in a second here, which I really liked on the remastered version.
This is not. No, we're not watching the remastered. This is the original.
This is not the remastered version, so I take it all back.
Yeah.
But I will say they did some really nice castle updates on the remastered version. Because I do watch the remastered versions on occasion. So.
What's wrong with their face?
What's wrong with their face? I will say that this was a very striking image when I was a kid, though, when they had the end credits. You know, when they showed the still frames of different episodes at the end of the episodes, they had a witch face. I was like, oh, what's that? Before I saw this episode, it was creepy. So I understand why your daughter might have been scared by this. Mm-hmm. And they're like, whoa.
And they talk like this. We should do the rest of the commentary like that.
I love Spock's analysis. You're a very bad poetry captain. Kirk's like, ah. Not now, Spock. You and her smart-ass comments.
It was awesome, though. She was legit freaked out. She was hiding under the couch.
Wonderful parent, Brandon. My daughter was so scared. It was so awesome.
We have a couch that, like, unfolds into a bed, and it was open at the time, and she was, like, right under it.
So they're still wandering around the planet here. They're running into the winds of Saruman here as they try to go on their quest to destroy the ring.
This is, you see stuff like this, and when you're mocking it and whatnot, it just makes me think of Ed Wood when he has to, like, get in the water with that octopus. He's like...
He's moving the arms. Yeah.
move it around a bit.
I don't mind the episode so much at this point. I think there's a certain point where it jumps the shark and becomes, like, a really bad episode.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get into that. But up to this point, I think, okay, the witches are a little hit or miss, but, yeah.
I think it's the cat. Honestly, most of the episode is not that bad. I don't think. Like, here, all this witch stuff, all this imagery that we're seeing, this castle that we're about to see right away, like, it all really works. And even going in there and dealing with the two aliens, I think works very well as well, right?
Right. No, I that's exactly what I was going to say, too, is the cat is really what... When they giant little household cat... becomes the crux of your climax, you got a problem. But this is something they did improve on the remaster. They had a new matte painting of a or not a matte painting, but a CGI painting of a castle. It really expanded the scope of mm-hmm. things, and I really think that was a really good little thing they didn't have to fix, but they chose to. And that's what, you know, the Okudas really literally worked overtime to do those things, because that wasn't part of the agreement. Their mandate was to fix all the special effects shots in space, and anything beyond that was above and beyond. And I really did appreciate that aspect of the remastered project for TOS.
You know, I've still only seen the first season remastered. Like, I've got the Blu-rays, but I personally like watching them with the original effects. I still have to go back and watch. Like, even on my my rewatch last year for the 50th anniversary rewatch that we did, I watched them all with the original effects, mm-hmm. and I watched them in mono.
But hey, man, I'm the guy that watches them on a Laserdisc player, so I'm right there with you. But it is a nice alternative version. Unlike Star Wars, they haven't erased the original versions. You're able to watch both in the highest quality, should you so choose.
So you could kind of say that the Blu-rays are an alternative factor?
You could say that.
Yeah, okay, good.
It sure is taking a while to get inside this castle, though, I must say. I bet when they did syndication cuts, they really cut a lot of this out. And they chopping
you mean
off their 50.
We could cut 8 minutes of this this walking into the castle out.
Yeah, because it was 52 minutes, I think, was the original time. They come down to about 46 or 45, and they continue to cut them down as TV has continued. There's a cat.
See, they do the first shot to make you think it's big,
yeah,
because it's up close, and then it's like really small.
And I like the Dutch angle on the cat. It's like Interesting. I don't know what it is, but it's interesting.
It's a Batman villain.
Yeah, exactly. This is like probably the same cat they use in all the Catwoman episodes, you know?
And I wonder if that's Isis.
I'm sure it is.
There's only one paid cat in Hollywood. It's got its own trailer and everything.
Isis is a very different meaning nowadays. I've realized this because there was, you know, obviously the Isis is the cat in Assignment Earth. There's an episode of Smallville called Isis. One of the characters on Smallville starts an Isis foundation. So when I get to talking about those episodes on my other podcast, I'm going to have to comment on that.
Yeah, so like the, you know, if the FBI is like scanning your audio files, like you're like high on the list of like potential, you know, watch lists.
This guy says Isis like 3 times an hour. So here's Walter Koenig's checkoff.
Bad hair.
This is the worst terrible wig ever. Of course, it was supposed to recreate Davy Jones and the Monkees, who were of course, inspired by the Beatles. So everything is pop culture kind of eating itself like the snake, right? This is a very ineffectual plot when they're on the Enterprise. This shows me why in further episodes they don't always cut back to the ship. Because you see how boring and useless it is. It's like, we have to break through this force field. We've got to keep working. And it's like it's like every time they do nothing, especially this episode where they literally, and we'll get to it at the end where Korob has a line. He's like, I released your ship, but they would have done it themselves eventually. They were on a good track. They were doing their work up there. It's like they give the crew some credit, but the classic door closing itself gag. What a gag. Of course, Spock doesn't. Spock, who is a... It's so paradoxical, Spock's knowledge, right? Because he has this encyclopedic knowledge of all history of, like, all these cultures. Yet, he doesn't know about trick-or-treat. He doesn't know about row, row, row your boat. You know, he doesn't know about marshmallows.
Would they have trick-or-treat at this time? Like, I'm sure that, you know, being a Vulcan, you know, raised on Vulcan, he wouldn't be exposed to trick-or-treat. And then going to Starfleet Academy...
You don't think they had, like, a special Halloween days to start for the Academy? Nobody came to school in the costume?
Well, I mean, in this day and age, you can't even, like, have Halloween or Christmas or whatever at work for tolerance, right? And that's now, so I'm guessing...
Ooh! No. Look at that fall.
Oh, that is not how that actually broke.
And, by the way, there's no way they wouldn't have broken some bones in that kind of fall. Look at that.
With those stones.
Now, are they suspended in the air here? I could, like, when I watched it before, no. I couldn't really tell. They're standing on the ground.
Yes.
And their arms are chained up. Okay. It looks like in some shots they're being suspended, which would be much more painful. This is an effect, like we're talking about, other than that pretty cheesy explosion. This is an effective set here, the skeletons. And...
Now, how does that skeleton hold itself together? Like, why did the bones not just, like, collapse?
Because they went and bought it at a prop shop.
Oh, okay, good. Yes, okay. Well, that answers that question.
I do like Kirk's like, but Doc. He's about to call him Bones and sees the bones and calls him Doc instead. He could just call him Leonard. God forbid.
How many times now have we seen them, like, chained up? Like, there was also Archons, Return of the Archons. They were, like, chained up at one point. And
I know in Season 2, I feel like it happens a lot more, because, like, in Patterns of Force, I know they are.
Weren't they chained up in Archons? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm thinking of this episode, but...
Yeah, I don't remember exactly in Archons, but I know Bread and Circuses, they probably are, and, or at least they're in jail cells. But the Patterns of Force, I think they are, for sure. Maybe Omega Glory. This is them talking about some parallel development Earth, which we haven't even... It's the first episode of Season 2. We haven't even done much of that yet, but they're already throwing it out there.
Yeah, all these dungeons look the same with the, you know, the stairs over off in the corner there. Like, it's definitely one set. You can see Scotty's missing finger there.
Oh, you can?
Yeah. Look at the way he's holding the gun. Can you see it?
Oh, I see. Okay, I see.
Maximize your screen.
I don't know why James Doohan chose to make an effort to hide it, because I think if there's any character on Star Trek that would have a missing finger, it would be an engineer. So it would make perfect sense, you know, for him to have a missing finger. I mean, own that, man. That's cool. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe it was, like, sensors.
Yeah, like, it's going to creep out the kids. It's like, Mom, he only has 4 fingers. If you, you know, and if you want an in-universe explanation, it could have been when Apollo shocked him in Who Mourns for Adonis. Scotty, do you hear me? Just throwing that out there for all you fan justifiers out there.
Finger?
Yeah, but you know, I'm just saying, if you wanted to, like, well, when did Scotty lose his finger in the universe? You know, Apollo shocks him with some lightning, you know, point blank range in that episode. That could have been a reason. Or could he just been messing around with the warp engines and some plasma coil blew up in his hand? You know, who knows? So. But yeah, so Spock mentions that everything they're experiencing here is what terrifies man on a most instinctive level. I don't know if that's the case, Brandon. What about you?
I think so. I mean, it doesn't translate well to screen, but I mean, like, dark caverns and darkness where you can't see. Like, I'm still it's not that I'm afraid of the dark, right? But I don't like going in dark places. And I remember when I was a teenager, there was this place. I lived in a little town called LaRange, Saskatchewan, and there was this area. I can't remember the name of the street anymore, but from where I lived to where my friend Matthew lived, there was a path that you could go on. It was a well-defined path, but it wasn't lit very well. So at nighttime when I would go, and it wasn't a very long path, right? But when I would go visit him at nighttime,
there, by the
way. It would freak me out to go down this dark path, right? Like, I was always very scared of it. And I don't know why. Like, I just didn't like going down this path at night. And like, I'm a big man, you know, like even as a teenager, I was a big boy. And I could have gone around it, and it would have, like, quadrupled my time, but I never did, right? Because it would, because literally to follow the road would have taken, like, forever to get around it, just the way that this road was shaped. Versus, like, literally, honestly, it was like a 2-minute walk through this trail, not even, and it just freaked me out every time I went through it.
Well, you're right. The TOS is, it's colorful, it's bombastic, it's theatrical. You know, that doesn't marry well with, let's make a creepy, unsettling atmosphere. And that's why we have this, like, B-grade haunted house feel in this episode,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
Right. It doesn't translate well. Like horror imagery itself doesn't really translate that well to the screen, because when you bring it out in the light, it's silly. But, you know, when it's in the darkness, it can be quite frightening, and that's what I believe, right?
It's always what you don't see is scarier than what you do see.
Yeah, exactly.
The Alfred Hitchcock school of suspense, right, Brendan?
Mm-hmm.
You know a thing or two about that?
One or two, yeah. Speaking of, if you go over to the Fandom Podcast Network and check out my show, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast that I do with my friends Chris and Tom.
There we go. See, we got to get our plugs in for our other shows.
And you, I mean, you are one Superman, let me tell you.
Oh, well, you know, it's all Smallville. I don't know. I was going to... Couldn't think of it, guys, and this is live, so it's not like I can edit that. So we just got to keep moving forward. There's no editing these commentaries. So, what is it with TOS and cats, though? I mean, this episode in Assignment Earth, there's always these like mysterious guys and these black cats.
That's the first and the last episode. It's a bookend. It's like the cigarette smoking man going and putting that thing in the Pentagon basement.
Okay, you know, tangent. Is that not stock footage from the pilot? In the Aramaya flask, I'm 100% sure it is.
I don't think it is.
And if you guys know the X-Files, you know what we're talking about. If you don't, then just spare me this 60 seconds here. Seriously, I think they just shot a new insert shot of them putting the alien embryo on the shelf.
Instead of the silver thing?
Yes, and everything else is entirely the scene for the pilot. Go watch them back to back. I think you're right.
Oh, maybe.
So, Brandon and I also talk about the X-Files a lot on the X-Cast. You guys should check that out. So, let's just keep plugging all of our other stuff. Anyway, back to TOS here. I like how Spock is talking about here. He's telling McCoy and Kirk about the legends of wizards and their demonic associates, their familiars, you know? And they give Spock, like, they think it's stupid, and he's like, I did not create the legend, Captain. I merely report it. So I think that's a good line there.
Do you think this episode would have been better if it was a musical?
I mean,
like that thing he has in his hand could be his microphone, and he could just be like singing, like goblins and boogeymen.
Well, we know Shatner and Nimoy both have albums and are musicians. Well, they fancy themselves as singers, so I wouldn't have minded that.
With large quotation marks around that,
I do like what Korob said there earlier. He says that. I do not understand that reference, therefore it is also of no importance. I want to start saying that when I don't understand stuff.
Just start putting it on Facebook after like all the trolls. I do not understand that reference. It is therefore deemed unimportant.
So he is so he's trying to bribe Kirk and company here with like jewels and precious metals and whatnot. And much like Trelane and Squire Gothos, apparently these guys have out of date information on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, I tell you what would get me is that roast he had on there.
Yeah, it's like, all right, fine.
What do you want me to do? I'll do it. Just give me that roast.
Did that remind you of Pan's Labyrinth, though?
Like when I've only seen it once.
Oh, it's good. When the little girl, she's so hungry when she goes to like this banquet hall, and Doug Jones, Saru, is the man with the hands and the eyeballs, and you can't eat off his table or he comes to get you. That's the food temptation. That was probably the best use of that I've seen in a film or TV show.
Well, and this roast was pretty good looking.
And speaking of, you know, we mentioned Catwoman and Batman and stuff earlier. Korob here, he kind of looks like King Tut from the Batman show.
Mm-hmm.
That little goatee that sticks out. But is it supposed to be like a twist when the cat comes back in and it's Sylvia? Like, are we not supposed to know? You know, because they were like building up this whole like, oh, the cat's gonna leave, and oh, look, a woman came back, right? I mean, do you think people were like surprised by that?
No, but wasn't there like a '60s show like Bewitched or whatever where she could like turn into a cat? So I'm sure they were all like, I don't know, maybe it wasn't Bewitched.
It was Bewitched or I Dream of Jeannie. Yeah.
Maybe it was I Dream of Jeannie. Yeah,
the '60s is a weird time, man.
Things were strange back then.
Oh man.
Yeah, this, you know, I was talking to somebody at one point. I can't remember what podcast we were doing, but I had said, name me an original series episode that doesn't have a sequel that's been in a novel. And you know what? I don't think Cat's Paws had a sequel in a novel.
Well, you know, that's I remember you mentioning that, or we've talked about it. Here's what I was talking about, where the cat leaves and she comes back.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned this before, either in a podcast or just in our nerdy conversations.
Is she the cat?
Whoa! Kirk's like, oh, hello. Gentlemen,
my colleague. She's wearing the same necklace as the cat.
Oh, it's what ties it all together, I understand. This episode would be perfect for a novel or some kind of tie-in because they come from another galaxy, and they mention the old ones, which they also mention in What Are Little Girls Made Of, which is mm-hmm. Robert Bloch talking about the Lovecraftian mythology and whatnot. So that's a bigger tie-in they could have done if they had chose to, but I think this episode, it's like one of those, like, well, let's not touch that one again. Just like the Gorgon and the Children Shall Eat, or we don't talk about Lazarus anymore.
Well, the Gorgon comes back in some Next Generation novels.
He does?
Yeah, like in the Q trilogy, there's by Greg Cox.
Did you mention that in our last commentary?
I don't know if I did or not, but Amy did those on Literary Trek. So the Gorgon comes back. So does quote-unquote God from Star Trek V. He's also in that trilogy of books. Oh, Scotty, punch to the face.
He just pushes it like that.
But yeah, I don't think this one actually has a sequel. Hmm. Come on, David Mack.
Yeah, where's our old ones tie-in?
Oh, man, we should get... Who writes some significant Cthulhu novels?
I have no idea.
Get them to write a Star Trek book.
Now, this little trick here, making the Enterprise small and then affecting it, this also happens again in Requiem for Methuselah. And in that one, they like literally use the prop of the Enterprise. You know, Kirk like looks in the view screen and they see him all big and stuff. I actually like this one better. Like, that's a cool medallion. Like, if they sold that, like, I would buy that and like hang it from my rearview mirror in my car. Like,
what if they sold it with a candle?
I mean, I would give the candle away like at a white elephant party, but I'd keep the Enterprise.
My wife had a birthday cake, and because she's at work, because she's a Star Trek fan, it had Star Trek on it, and so she gave me like the little cake topper of the Enterprise. I've got it on my shelf for her.
Nice. I'll wait for it here. There's going to be some pilot stock footage coming up here. It's either from The Cage or Where No Man Has Gone Before. Probably from Where No Man Has Gone Before. Yeah, wait for it.
Yeah,
they did they did this in season one, and this is kind of like leftover season one, early season two episodes, so wait for it. There it is.
That would be Where No Man's Gone Before.
Yeah, you can tell by the uniforms.
Yeah.
You know. Come on, Star Trek. It's one thing to use stock footage of the ships, but not the people, too.
Well, I've never noticed it. I don't know. That's the first time. I only was because you told me. That's the only thing I never noticed before.
Didn't they know we're going to be sitting here 50 years later analyzing it?
Look at that hair. Oh, my goodness.
This is, I think after this, maybe, there's going to be two or three episodes of season two where he has really bad hair. Then after that, it looks a little more natural.
Voodoo doll ship? Voodoo ship, I guess?
Guess so. So, you know, Shatner, he says telekinesis wrong. And that just made me think of, like, Sabotage in this episode. He says, like, telekinesis, or... he puts the emphasis on the wrong syllable, as they say.
Syllable.
But that's just classic Shatner. I don't know if it's Canadian or if it's Shatner, but how do you say telekinesis, Brandon?
Telekinesis.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're correct.
Well, thank you. I say sabotage.
I say sabotage. You say sabotage.
Well, it depends on the situation. Depends on how you're saying it. Sabotage, sabotage. Like when I'm singing along with the Beastie Boys, it's sabotage. Right?
Right.
So it all depends on the situation.
McCoy go.
He's off eating the roast.
Oh, you need something, Jim?
Maybe they gave him mint julep to, like, convert him.
That's saying they gotta know. They gotta know what gets him. That's interesting that, you know, ask him about his science and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is... The presentation is off here, but I feel like the... I love that reaction shot, by the way, of Korob. It's like... I really like wide-angle lens, but way too close to him, so it makes an interesting perspective, especially with that eyebrow raise. But the concepts here are interesting, because as we learn, these aliens, Korob and Sylvia, they're not humanoid. They're like little...
Fraggle Rock people.
Yeah, yeah, puppets, bird puppets, and they're kind of... Sylvia especially is kind of like... overwhelmed by all this like sensation and feeling and all this stuff that her original form could not experience and kind of corrupts her, because Korob seems like it's just hey, we're here to do our mission, you're getting off book, you know, we need to stop messing around with these people, and she's really enjoying it, relishing it. And I think that's an interesting concept to take, but hey, these aliens that are just it's just too much to handle, like, you know, just existing as a humanoid with all the feelings, both physical and mental and emotional, all that stuff. And I think that's an interesting concept that I don't know they tackle too much in Star Trek. It's usually the other way around, you know.
Well, that's how I feel when I podcast with you. Sometimes it's just all these feelings that you well up. They just, it's so overwhelming, Zach.
Well, thank you, Brandon.
There's McCoy. He was at the end of the table.
Yeah, they're at the kids' table over there. But yeah, this is the continuing, completely ineffective Enterprise plot. The key cutting. We're going to keep working on it, sir. Oh, sir, are you there? Okay. And they saved a lot of money, too, in like, you know, episodes like All Our Yesterdays. Like, they don't even cut back to the ship at all. We don't even see them beam down. So they just like, you know, we can save a lot of money. We don't have to pay James Doohan and Shell Nichols, George Takei. We just don't cut back to the ship.
See, I want to have a house with a dining room like this with these, like, angled doors, like these arching doors and stuff. Wouldn't you like that in your house?
Yeah, I'll just go to Renfest and experience this once a year. That's fine.
Is that like a place where you can go and get like that lamb's leg or whatever? And eat the
yeah.
Whole leg?
You don't have a Renaissance fair up there in Canada?
Not that I know of. There's a place in Moose Jaw. There's a city called Moose Jaw. Believe it or not, there's a city called Moose Jaw not that far from where I live. And I think they have like a restaurant you can go to and do that. They have like special events. I've just never been.
Medieval times. Same deal. Assistant Chief Engineer LaSalle.
That's probably why I didn't recognize him, because, yeah, he is in a yellow shirt the other time. It's a gold shirt.
Mm-hmm.
See, Discovery's not canon. Look at this bridge. Discovery doesn't look anything like this.
I have not read the novel where they cross over with the Enterprise, but it explains a lot of the visual inconsistencies between Discovery and TOS.
I have read that book.
Mm-hmm. It's like Spock commenting on how humans just change their aesthetics and stuff like that.
It's an okay book. I didn't mind it. I mean, it's not great. It's subpar for David Mack. He's had better, but...
Did you like them addressing the fact of how the Enterprise looks so different than the Discovery? Or the Shenzhou, I should say.
Yeah, than the Shenzhou. Sure. I mean, it's fine, like, because, you know, just with one sentence, like with the uniforms where he says, oh, it's, these uniforms were exclusively for the Constitution class. Well, like, with one line, you can just shut everybody down, right? And I like that they can do that. That's good.
Right.
But, you know.
I know we were joking about that skeleton earlier. You can clearly see that it's not a decomposed skeleton. It has the little line across the cranium that they cut to take the brain out. So,
the fake brain.
Yeah, it's like literally one you would find in a doctor's office. By your reaction to the environment he provided, he expected me to
react as overall normal. Well, he admitted. See, the interesting thing about Star Trek Continues with Vic Mignogna is he does the pronunciations of the words that Shatner does as well. Like, he did it in the... Did you see episode 10 yet?
I was just about to watch episode 10, and then you're like, hey, let's do this podcast right now. And I'm like, oh. I literally sat down to watch it.
He says a word. I think it's sabotage, like he says in the episode. So I'll have to ask you afterwards what you think of it. There's two parts in it that made me laugh, and I don't think they're intentional laughs, but yeah.
No, he's a perfect Kirk. Like if you squint, you think you're watching Shatner's Kirk on the screen. He's amazing. He really captures the essence of being Shatner without being a parody of Shatner, and that is so hard to do.
Yeah, well, my wife said that. I had put it on the other night. We're watching it, and my wife's like, wow, he does a really good job.
Your wife's like, wow, I had never seen this episode of Star Trek before. Oh, wait, this isn't...
No, she knew what I was watching. But yeah, she was like, wow, he does a really good job of Shatner.
Yeah, he's incredible. Also, earlier, Shatner was mimicking the skeleton there. I wonder if that was like in the script or that was him just... getting bored with him being in this dungeon for so long, just doing something interesting with the scene. He kind of positioned his body like that, like his head was tilted the way the skeleton was. So little moments like that.
Wonder how many takes that took.
Bones has the crazy eyes from City on the Edge of Forever here. Assassins! Murderers!
He just doesn't have the lesions on his face and
killers!
The pale skin.
Right.
Why don't their pants go down to their ankles?
Because they're wearing boots.
Oh. Okay.
There you go. Take that, hater. No. Why doesn't the bridge look the same? Why are their pants go down their ankles?
This isn't Star Trek.
This is interesting. We don't often get this. This is a scene between the two, you know, just aliens or whatever, talking to each other. Like, you get their perspective outside of Kirk's perspective of them.
Well, we got a balance of terror.
Well, I was just going to say, it kind of reminds me of Balance of Terror, you know.
Like, way usually, ahead of you, Moore. Way ahead of you.
But yeah, it's just, I mean, you're kind of talking about the room here, the dining room. It just looks like they went to the prop room and just picked
grab
any
that.
Random thing.
Oh,
like,
man, that would be great. You should grab that, man. Don't leave that behind. Look at that chair. Bring that in here.
Because he's like wearing like an Egyptian. There's that camera angle again. I have the power.
Oh, I love this cloak. Can I just take this cloak? Oh, look at this eye on here. Like, that's so subtle. Like, people will be debating that for the next 50 years with this.
Yeah,
cloak
this stuff
means.
Like, does not match. There's eclectic, and then there's this, and this does not match.
Why is it pink?
Well, you know, you could always the whole thing in TOS is, oh, the aliens don't quite properly understand the way things are supposed to be. Like Inspector of the Gun or something like that. Or they didn't know we had walls on our buildings. It's an incomplete memory, Captain. So silly.
We had $50 to spend on this budget, Captain.
You know, earlier she did say, I'm not a puppet, which is ironic because they are puppets. I thought that was a little funny, unintentional irony there in the script.
Zach. I definitely had more fun laughing at And the Children Shall Lead.
Yeah, you know, because you watch this episode and it's like, it's not as absurd, it's not as terrible as you think it is. At the end, the climax is really where it all falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
But up to this point, it's like, okay, this is pretty standard TOS, you know?
Yeah. And Children of the Lead is just nonsense.
It's just complete garbage. So, I mean, Catspaw, would you really rank it in the bottom of TOS? I feel like it's on a lot of people's worst of lists.
I would definitely put it pretty low on the list. Like, it's not a terrible episode, but it's not good either. I mean, like, it's pretty slow. I think it's a pretty slow episode.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah, like we were saying, like, it took them forever to get in the castle. Now they've gone back and forth to the dungeon like 2.5 times now, where we're getting, and this is kind of trotted ground already, right? Stuff like with Trelane, right? We've seen this kind of stuff before. So,
Peeping Tom.
Yeah. How does it
Yeah, but I don't know. It's not a good episode. It's not terrible, but it's not very good.
Mm-hmm. See, now this is Kirk. This is Kirk doing what Kirk does, and becomes the stereotype of him. But he's seducing her like as a means to an end.
That's right.
To get information and all that. So that's smart. You know, it's like there's a reason he's doing what he's doing here. And he can analyze the situation and use it to his advantage. He can see how she's like getting all cut up in these emotions, and he's just gonna overpower her with them. So, put on that Kirk charm.
Yeah, because most people just think he just kisses people just because he's romantic or whatever. And no, he's definitely always trying to, you know, gain and advance the plot and save his crew when he's doing it.
And if there's certain benefits to that, then, you know, so
except
be it.
Except for Edith Keeler, right?
Right.
And
Miramani.
Miramani.
Miramani! What is that?
Miramani!
Is that how I said it?
That's how you say it, usually.
Miramani! Miramani!
Now, why wasn't this lady in the White Iris?
That's the worst episode of Continues, by the way. I don't really like White Iris.
Vic Mignogna, if you could stop listening 5 seconds ago, please.
Look, Vic, I love all your work. But that episode is my least favorite.
I disagree. I didn't like the one with the rock man.
Oh, that one? I thought that was interesting.
I think that's my least favorite. With the, what do they call him? Oogly or something?
Oosty.
Oosty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, those are the weakest two episodes so far, but I love
the last two have been really good.
Well, I was about to watch the last one, but someone now wanted to do a podcast right now.
Well, I'll let you know it's really good.
So, these outfits here, she looks like Hydrogen of Genie here.
Terrible.
I'll tell you what's terrible. I'll tell you what's terrible. This is like a sumo wrestler.
I don't know.
It's terrible. It's the worst thing. She's trying to seduce him in that. That's terrible. You like what you see? Hell no, I don't like what I see.
Yeah, I saw that on my couch.
Oh, my gosh.
I saw that on my parents' couch. Aaron Harvey's couch in the wood panel den. He's like, quit changing your clothes and just kiss me. See, like here, like you can tell he's totally not interested, right? Like
right.
The way he's looking around.
And she picks up on it too eventually here.
Yeah.
Which is great. I like that. Feathers in the wind without the
transmuter. I remember the first time I tried to kiss a girl and it was like this, and we were just like rubbing faces like this, and it was like, what are you doing?
If you try to learn how to kiss people by watching television, you're in bad shape. I mean, I've done it myself, where it's like, oh, this is what you're supposed to do, right?
This
like,
is how
you
Kirk kisses. He's just
you don't eat people's faces. You know?
I haven't. My cheeks aren't pushed into my chin far enough yet while I'm kissing you.
Oh, man.
Are you using me? You hold me in your arms and there is no fire in your mind. You're trying to deceive me. It's here.
I don't know why she's holding that necklace, like. That has no significance, though, because the wand that Korob has is the true power.
This is just the sub power. Transmuter.
That's what they call it. It's a transmuter.
I know. I know. I've seen the episode once or twice.
Wand with a light bulb at the end of it.
His microphone.
Yeah.
It's like one of those 70s game show microphones, just a little bigger.
The Price is Right microphone. Nice. Back to the dungeon. Ugh.
No, back to the ship.
And then we go back to the dungeon. Ugh. Anyway, they're still at it.
You know what's funny is I just finished reading today the book, Uhura's Song.
Hmm.
And there's all cats in it, right? And so here's Uhura, and the episode's called Cat's Paw.
Again, TOS with the cats, right? They have MRS on the animated series. Like, I get it, but I'm more of a dog person, so.
Are you? Well, no supervillain ever had a dog, right? Name me one supervillain that had a dog.
The Grinch.
Yeah, but that's not really his dog. You're the first person to ever actually be able to tell me one, so.
Thank you, Brandon.
Congratulations, Zach.
And well, you know what else? There's a round of applause for like done in the stupid dungeons, like our fourth time in there. So.
Yeah, but he's giving them their phasers.
This is where Krav is like, although they would have freed themselves soon. Like, sure, give them some credit up there.
You were kissing her, and I want to kiss her, so you get out of here.
It's like, so you guys like together, or what? What's your deal? What's the arrangement here?
Oh, man, we should totally do a Patreon bonus where we, like, rewrite the episode and on mute, and so then when they watch along, we just, like, say the character's words, but silly. Is that what they do in Mystery Science Theater? I've never seen it, actually.
You've never seen Mystery Science Theater?
I've never seen
it. All right, as soon as you're done here, and then you're done with your next podcast, because I know you're doing one after this, go watch an episode of Mystery Science Theater immediately. It's hilarious.
Is that what they do, or do they just do commentaries? Is it basically just commentaries?
Well, yeah, there's the three little cutouts of the guys at the bottom of the movie screen. Mm-hmm. And they're commenting on what's happening. But yeah, sometimes they fake characters' voices and stuff. But it's not an overdub job, if that's what you mean.
Oh, okay. Look, another skeleton.
Man, they really raided that doctor's office. Whoa.
Oh, look how big that cat is. Holy crap.
This is where it really starts to go downhill here.
That's a massive cat. Like, how could they possibly have done that special effects back in the days?
And it's also, like, slow motion, too.
Yeah.
It's like...
Spock's like, am I really in this episode?
The cat is the most ruthless and most terrifying of animals. Sure it is, Spock. Maybe on your planet.
Well, I mean, like, it's not the cat, but, like, lions, right? Like, is what I always...
Saber-toothed tigers, yeah.
Extrapolate from that. Cat is a member of the lion family. You know, sort of.
Yeah, so the climax spent running from this cat is really what sinks the episode in my book.
The last 10 minutes of it, basically?
Yeah, seriously. Like, it takes it so long, and then this is what we did. Look at this.
Look
this,
at how big it is. Oh, that my is, goodness.
That's like a clip out of a Conan O'Brien sketch from late night. It's just so cheesy.
It is, too.
Oh, here comes the giant cat. Oh, God, we're back in the dungeon. I thought we were out of there. Or it might be a different room. They're just saving budget. I don't know. Oh, it is a different room, I guess. No, I don't know.
Did they have that escape attempt in the dungeon the whole time?
No, this must be a different. It's the hallway.
Oh yeah, and then when the cat kills him, legit.
That was a freeze frame as well. Talking about freeze frames, like of The Witch earlier. Like that's a freeze frame I know on the at the end credits. Luckily we have this bed over here that Kirk can use to jump up. That's a freeze frame right there too.
You and your end credits freeze frame. How many times did you just rewind the end credits and watch them over and over?
Well, I just really enjoyed that aspect of TOS where like it's like here are all these episodes you may or may not have seen. Little glimpses at other adventures.
So. I'm just going to randomly draw images. What are the skeleton images from, like, the episodes and just create a GIF for you?
You should. Make me say what they are. We'll do that at the end here. We'll call out what the end credits, what episodes they're from. Kirk's like, this looked important. Nice catch, Spock, by the way.
Good editing.
Those Vulcan reflexes. That's true. Good editing, yeah. Oh! You know how short that shot was? Like, Shatner must not have been able to hold on very long. Oh! Don't forget these guys. And this is the other reason this episode was lame. This fist fight with, like, McCoy, Spock,
Who?
And...
Yeah, but look at the guy. It's, like, not even McCoy. It's
yeah, like... this is, like, Space Seed Mirror Mirror level of bad sun doubles here.
Well, no. Like, it's Tasha Yar in Encounter Farpoint. Like, that's a whole nother level. That's short dude with, like, the bad wig.
Kung Fu Sulu. He's no match for Kirk Fu, though. Like, if I were George Takei, be like, you guys are really going to have me do Kung Fu?
Who is that guy? it's not even Takei.
Well, George Takei, like, he, in Naked Time, like, they wanted to give him a samurai sword, and he was like, no, just because I'm Asian, he'll give me that. I wanted to be Robin Hood, and I was like, give me a, you know, fencing sword, you know. And that's what they gave him. So whenever they're like, hey, Sulu's Asian, let's have him do Kung Fu. It's like, really, guys? Come on. Well, at least we found them.
I definitely think that this episode is better than And the Children Shall Lead, but it's not as good as... Oh, what's another? I think Wolf in the Fold's better than this.
I agree. There's more locations anyway. Mm-hmm. There's more going on. And you get to see Piglet be possessed by the spirit of Jack the Ripper. I mean, that's pretty cool.
I would say this is probably in my bottom five.
Bottom five? Wow, this when Brandon says something in his bottom five, you know it's bad. this is probably... It might be the worst episode of season two. Assignment Earth... I barely even count that as a Star Trek episode. But yeah, it's... Well, I'll have to think. I'll have to meditate on that. But, I have the transmuter. It's mine now. I mean, we're talking to a shadow of a cat. what are we doing here, guys?
Back, you shadow, back!
Oh, man.
Oh, it's her! Oh, she's the cat!
She was the cat! Oh, what a twist! She was the cat all along. What a twist! Don't let her touch the wall, Captain.
Is she Odo?
No.
Oh. Is she the female changeling?
No.
Where'd they go?
Well, yeah, now that we've removed Spock to... Tell Kirk what to do. What will he do? And such cheap, and again, with any of these episodes of, like, spirits or magic or whatever, and I'm talking about anything, like, not just Star Trek, but any fiction, there's no rules that are established. So anything can happen. So the stakes are, like, what are the stakes? I don't even know what the stakes are here. Because they could do anything, and you could resurrect things, and he's going to destroy this wallet, and everything goes away, and it's like, I guess McCoy, it's Sulu and Scotty go back to normal, and they don't even remember anything. But Jackson is still dead, as Kirk will remind us at the end of the episode. You're not even a woman. I don't know what you are. I like indignant Kirk.
Oh, she's got the phaser. Oh. That's convenient. So how high would you put this then if you don't think it's like bottom five? Where would you put it?
I don't know. I'm just... Bottom 10.
Bottom 10?
Yeah. I mean, because End the Children Shall Lead's down there. You like Lights of Xatar, though. I was going to say Lights of Xatar's down there. Your top five or my bottom five?
No, I know that's not true.
I know, we joke.
So, now, I went to a convention at Vegas, and there was people cosplays as these things. Yeah, like full-size cosplay of these little things.
Oh, look, you got to give TOS credit. They made some aliens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean... Clearly,
like you're getting a cold. Like while we're talking, you're like developing a cold.
I need to blow my nose, but this is a live, commentary. So
well,
just
mute
do
your
it.
Thing. I can handle it for like
it's
10
okay.
seconds.
I gotta hold it together, guys.
Hold it together.
I'm giving it all she's got, Captain.
Yeah, they did do very weird aliens, but like now, what happens? Are they like melting? Like,
yeah, like we should study them. Oh no, they're dead. Oh okay, let's go.
Oh no, they're melting.
what a world. And Kirk has to remind us that Jackson is still dead because the guy died at the end of the episode, and that's the end. And this is I hadn't seen this episode in a while before we rewatched it, that I was waiting for like some Spock, Kirk, and McCoy scene on the bridge at the end. Nope. Just
nothing. Okay, now what was the curse that was put on the ship?
good point, Brendan. Okay, so that is from Miri. That's from Who Mourns for Adonis. That's from Battles of Terror.
That's the easy one.
I know, right?
Metamorphosis?
Metamorphosis.
That one where they
anything.
Did the thing?
Maybe, yeah, it's Enemy Within or Space Seed. It's just probably a shot of imaginary. Yeah.
Devil in the Dark.
Corporate maneuver.
Actually, none, because we never actually saw that image, because true. All of them were all, like, warped and, like...
There are a few images in there, because this is my obsession, apparently, as you pointed out, that aren't actually screenshots from TOS. It's very interesting to pick those out, but... Anyway, well, that was obviously not quite as fun as "And the Children Shall Lead," but hey, if there was ever a Halloween Star Trek episode, that was it. And since today's Halloween, we wanted to just celebrate with you guys talking about the Halloween episode of Star Trek, Cat's Paw. Well, bottom fire for you, Brandon. I'll have to look over the episodes again, but you know, TOS, but it's probably my bottom 10. So.
Yeah, this is definitely bottom five for me. So.
Well, Colin, thanks for taking the time. It's always fun to talk Trek with you, Brandon.
Thanks for having me on, and I like doing the bad episodes, so... You know, when Ken doesn't want to do the bad ones, you just call me.
We should do Wolf of the Fold next. I think that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, I love that episode.
Let's do the Robert Block trilogy. Let's do Wolf of the Fold, and then What Are Little Girls Made Of?
Sounds good.
So
What Are Little Girls Made Of is a great episode. I read the book Double Double before I saw the episode.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, no, we should totally, yeah. So Brandon and I, that'll be our thing at some point. If Kid can't be here, Brandon will fill in, and we'll do some commentary on some episodes. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Brandon, if people want to find you out there on the internet, man, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter, @BrandonMatella. You can find me here on the network with a show called The Edge, which is all about Star Trek Discovery. You can also find me on Warp 5 with my friend Floyd, where we talk about Star Trek Enterprise, and we're having lots of fun over there. Over on the Fandom Podcast Network, you can find me on Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with my friends Chris and Tom. And otherwise, you can find me eating roasts. Alien roast.
Well, when I'm not dangling my Model Enterprise over a candle, you can find me here on Stand in Orbit every week talking about TOS with Ken. You can find me on Always Hold On to Smallville, which is my podcast where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show. We're on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. And you can find me personally on Twitter at Moron Zach. That's MoroneZach. All right, guys. Well, happy Halloween. Be safe out there, trick or treating.
Enjoy the podcast. Be safe out there tonight.